You're going to say, welcome to the X-Men Task Podcast.
Hey, welcome to the X-Men Task Podcast. My name is Willie Simpson. Who are you?
I'm Sonya Rappaport.
And today, Sonya...
We have one more member.
I was just getting to know. I was trying to give an epic introduction here.
Sorry, go.
We have our returning champion...
Oh,
yeah, introduce yourself.
I'm Dash.
Dash Coombs is back.
What up?
By popular demand, I must say. Mm-hmm. And today, everyone...
That's impossible.
Within this household.
Oh, yeah. We're going to get Dash back.
Today, we are talking about the 8th episode of Season 3, the 34th episode overall, The Savage Land, Strange Heart, Part 1.
All right. I'm excited. I wasn't sure if you were done with the introductions and all the numbers.
Well, I was going to say, I'm getting a little annoyed. We just got done with Phoenix Month, and each episode title of Phoenix Month, it was the Phoenix Saga plus the title plus the part, and it's just like getting to be too much.
Well, this is a part one of two.
I know, so I thought we were going to get a little break after the Phoenix Saga, but apparently not. And I guess it's worth mentioning at this point, too, that this episode isn't supposed to... was not supposed to have aired when it did. However...
So what was the problem exactly? has that been...
So
have they actually talked about it?
Yeah. So the problem was that... Saban, who was in charge of the animation side of the production of the show, they were always looking for a way to make the show cheaper, and as a result, they kept trying to hire different animation studios, and they would give them test episodes to see if they could do it like cheaper and under budget and on time. This experiment of theirs did not work all the time. So what happened was after the Phoenix Saga... there's supposed to be an episode where Jean is found alive, because on a show like this, you can't really kill off a main character.
No.
That would be too dark and disturbing. So, while the airing of this episode doesn't contradict what we had just seen in the Phoenix Saga, and we'll get into that based on which characters we see, it doesn't address what had just happened previously.
Yeah, not at all.
Right.
Yeah, no.
So I believe...
We didn't even get a previously on X-Men in this episode, right?
Right.
It just launches.
It just goes right into it.
Yeah.
So, you know...
Everything's fine.
I believe the episode we're missing is called No Mutant is an Island. My failed memory could be failing me here. So essentially in that episode, at the end of the episode with, spoilers, they find Jean. So that's what happens there. It doesn't matter that we're skipping that episode. For the sake of not only confusion, I want to carry on with what the regular continuity is. And it's also more interesting to have skipped that episode, not to try to fix it ourselves. So this is how it aired when we were kids, too. After the Phoenix Saga, the Savage Land episodes came next. So, we're just carrying on the tradition here.
Yeah, we're rolling.
Yeah, all right, so we're rolling. Okay, so the whole thing has been addressed.
Thank God.
I know. Oh, my God. There was someone on the Facebook group, I believe Adam, he was very concerned about this. He wanted us to, jump to the proper episode.
I understand that impulse.
Right, but it's just...
I like continuous timeline storytelling.
As you can tell by me trying to describe all of this, it hurt my brain. So the less said about that, the better. All right, anyway, so Dash, you have returned into our midst. And the last time we saw you, you were also in the Savage Land.
That's true, yes.
I guess
coincidence?
By virtue of you being here today, it seems like you haven't been able to leave the Savage Land.
No, I'm stuck there. It's me and Zabu hanging out. I am the Savage Land expert that you bring onto the show. Yeah. Who knows nothing about the Savage Land.
So maybe after these episodes, you can hop on our X-Jet and safely return home
please,
to New Jersey.
Please. Oh, New Jersey, the Savage Land. It smells bad.
I wasn't making that joke, anyway.
But we'll accept it here.
Yeah.
Right. So this
very defensive about New Jersey. Excuse me.
Maybe one day I'll go into my dark New Jersey roots. I've been establishing this fake New York City persona.
Yeah, I know.
Although it's not really fake, but it is a long...
Keep telling people you're walking here.
All right, anyway. So this episode opens up back in the Savage Land. We see our old pal Sauron, who... Sauron's this green pterodactyl man that's got a very ridiculous voice.
He does.
Yeah, he's like, I'm Sauron! Is that pretty good?
Yes, it's pretty accurate.
That's pretty good. You weren't expecting that, right? I wasn't expecting either. I had no idea what was about to come out.
I wasn't surprised, if that's what you mean.
All right, so anyway, Sauron, it seems, he has taken over this mythical citadel, which was the...
Once again, right?
Right. Well, what do you mean by that?
Wasn't that the last Savage Land episode? Or no, I guess Magneto had taken it over, but with Sauron.
But, right, they were on the same side.
Or Mr. No. Sinister, Dr. Sinister, whatever.
That was all wrong.
Okay, fine. I'll see myself out.
Yeah, please leave. No, as far as what we know based on the show, this Magneto had created the Citadel originally.
Right.
Which is a detail that comes up later that's important, because there's certain things he left behind. Mm. Right? Mm-hmm. So he created the Citadel, he left the Savage Land in a bad place, according to Kazar. Then Mr. Sinister came in and took it over with his gang. They were driven out by the X-Men, but okay. Sauron was left behind. He was the last piece standing.
I see. But wasn't he working with Mr. Sinister?
Yeah, he was. Okay. He was working with Mr. Sinister. To what end, it was a little confusing to the extent of which he was allied with Mr. Sinister.
Okay.
But after Mr. Sinister got driven out with his gang, the Nasty Boys, the failed Prince backup band, that failed the audition, Sauron took it over. So now we are seeing the consequences of his having taken over the Citadel. And he has this little army behind him, and Kazar's people, the good people of the Savage Land, are launching an attack on the Citadel to finally drive out Sauron and his reign of terror, as it is later described. So, Sauron's been spreading, like, tyranny and disaster upon the Savage Land. And by the way, in case you're confused, although you're probably not, the Savage Land is this place in Antarctica that's, like, it's like prehistoric jungle times. And it's inexplicably hot there for some reason. So that's where we are. So there's this attack going on the Citadel. The Kazar people have catapults with flaming balls. And Sauron's group of... I don't understand why there would be any humans on Sauron's side.
Yeah.
In the Savage Land.
Did he hypnotize them, maybe?
That
it
must
could
be
have.
It.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like wondering. It seems like a really small community of people. Why would anyone break off like politically or something? Or, but you're right. It has to be hypnotism. So anyway, his people are flying around with buckets of water, expertly dropping these buckets on the cannonballs
carried by their leather chickens.
Right. but it's to no avail because Kazar and his group have stormed the Citadel. They've got Sauron captured. There's a little bit of a fight. But the last second, Sauron is saved by a new character known as Zaladin. How would you guys describe Zaladin, if you could?
She's very avian-looking. She's got a lot of bird features on her.
Yeah, that's right.
Like ruffles on her shoulder, like plumage. Mm-hmm.
She has like those colored streaks in her hair, like that almost look like feathers. I would say, red and yellow feather, and the yellow lipstick, striking.
Yeah, you never see anyone with yellow lipstick. Not a popular color.
No,
in our world.
The differences.
And it turns out, maybe only if you are the high priestess of the sun god Garak do you get magical yellow lipstick.
That's
so
true.
That's what Zaladin's occupation is.
She's been smooching the sun god.
Oh, there you go. That's why.
When you make out with the sun god, your lips turn bright yellow.
They should turn green.
And let's not get
into
that.
No!
So, you know, I thought it was funny when we last talked about the Citadel and the Savage Land, not to keep belaboring the Citadel. We talked about, like, it only seemed like there was one room, even though Magneto used a secret entrance to get to the one room, and we were making fun of it. In this episode, they kind of answer our criticism, our 30 years later criticism that we retroactively applied on the watching of the show. There are many rooms to the Citadel. Secret rooms, secret entrances, invisible doors, all sorts of, like, crazy hidden door tricks going on. Mm-hmm. So Zaladin sort of takes Sauron under his wing just as Kazar is about to get to him. She takes him on, like, a hidden stairwell through an invisible door, and
At the back entrance.
Yeah. Just like the bat. She takes him to the exposed air garage where Magneto's airplane has been parked. And she gives this... And as she does this, Sauron turns into this regular dude named Karl Lykos.
Right.
So... And then it's... they establish that... I mean, this is from the comics, too. But they establish that Sauron and Karl Lykos are not the same person, even though they share the same body. So Karl Lykos is this nice, like, kind of down-to-earth hippie guy. He speaks, like, in a real laid-back manner. Although it is very clearly the guy, the Magneto actor, playing
right.
the part.
Just putting on a deep voice.
Yes. Talking a bit more laid-back. Yeah. Like a laid-back Wolverine. And this Karl Lykos guy, he's a good guy. Mm. He does not like that he's Sauron. And when he turns into Sauron, he has no... like real memory of it. Maybe he does, but he's not in control. Yeah.
He's just racked with despair
and guilt. Yeah, right? yeah. So when he's Karl Lykos, it's like Hulk and Bruce Banner.
Yeah,
kind of thing. So yeah. So when Karl Lykos is back to normal, he's a human being for all intents and purposes. But the Zaladin quickly changes all that. She puts a sun god yeah. Garak. Emblem idol thing on
amulet.
His chest.
Amulet. Yeah, amulet.
Right.
There you go.
Yeah, she puts that on his chest and then immediately kind of brainwashes him. And she tells him, you must go and find the X-Men. I mean, she doesn't say the X-Men, but you have to go to the United States for some reason. And
well, she programs it into his, like, airplane, right? And
right.
It's like...
We see the last four...
Yeah. Los Angeles.
Houston.
Asteroid M.
Yeah.
New
yeah.
York City.
Right, the last five places Magneto's been.
I don't know if Asteroid M is on the way from Los Angeles to New York City, but okay.
Well, you gotta
it's a hub.
You gotta catch some red eye from Houston to Asteroid M. So, she essentially... she doesn't tell him go find the X-Men. She needs him to find mutant energy so he can turn back into Sauron. So the way his powers work is he, in order to stay alive, he needs to absorb the energy of regular humans, and that just sort of that gives him allows him to live for another day. But if he happens to absorb the energy of a mutant, he turns into Sauron, and that's when all the badness happens. So that's why Zaladin sends him off to the United States, to New York City. So now, cut to New York. We have Rogue and Storm riding horseback in Central Park. Which, you know, if you ever go to any of the parks in New York City, you do see people ride on horses occasionally. So that is a thing.
That's a thing.
Right, yeah.
They're rarely dressed like cowboys and cowgirls, like Rogue is in this episode.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, no. Rogue is dressed like a cowgirl. Yeah. Storm's like wearing a real fancy lady.
Yeah, she's got her jod purrs and
yeah. That's more
and her riding helmet.
Yeah. New York City horseback riding, I would say.
People wearing the Storm outfit.
Fancy pants. Horseback riding.
That's true. So it's here that Rogue is sort of at her like most, expressing her most lustiest southern drawlness. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Okay.
It's got extra molasses on
yeah.
it.
Yeah. And she's really egging Storm on to just let loose and to let it all hang out. And Storm is very cautious. You know, Storm always has this problem. They don't talk about it too much on the show up to this point, but I feel like they have mentioned it a few times, that she needs to stay very composed and in control because her powers are such that if she loses control, there's no telling what will happen. She has to, like, be very, like, mentally organized.
Yeah.
Again, another Bruce Banner-Hulk comparison. a discussion of the Hulk might come up a bit later in this podcast, as we'll see. But anyway, but in this moment, though, Storm decides to take Rose's advice, and she lets loose a little, and she, like, he-yaws her horse, and they go riding off around in Central Park. So, and I like this stuff. I like when we just see the X-Men out and about.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know, they just had a traumatic... I know this is not the proper episode order necessarily, but they did just have a traumatic, like, save the universe with the whole Phoenix saga.
Yeah.
So they need to just get back to reality and, like, chill out.
Right. And take a field trip.
Right.
To the museum.
So why describe what's going on with our other X-Men pals?
Well, we got Wolverine, Beast, Jubilee.
Yes.
Just the three of them,
yes,
right?
Yes.
All wearing. Well, Wolverine's shirt is like an oil slick that's just molded into a t-shirt.
With very, yellowy,
yeah, it's
like,
very bizarre.
Shininess. Yeah.
Jubilee's wearing her cool teen gear, mm-hmm. of course.
Sure.
But Hank McCoy took Hank a page McCoy. Right out of the Ninja Turtles book. Got himself a fedora and a trench coat. And of course, his underoos.
His blue,
just the underpants. Yeah.
His blue like spandex underpants. We should say, right?
Yeah.
Speedo.
Yeah, it's a speedo.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
With the belts.
I mean, you know,
well, he's a gentleman.
I think like Hank's a freaking badass. That is a yeah. crazy outfit to rock in New York City. That is like the height of like fashion in a weird way. You'd see that in a runway show or something,
right?
Like a man. Wearing a trench coat, a fedora, and just, like, spandex underwear.
Or on the subway at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Right, yeah. yeah.
So.
A man who might have perhaps sold his pair of pants to get on that subway. So Hank's just letting it all hang out, more or less. And they're at the Natural History Museum.
Right.
So another real location, and that's always nice to see. And he's boring Jubilee to death with the sight of dinosaurs,
mm-hmm.
but perhaps a little bit of light foreshadowing.
Ah.
As we'll
oh.
see. Right. And so after they're done with the museum, he wants to go somewhere else. Where does he want to go next?
The Guggenheim?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Those are in the same area, right?
Yeah, the Guggenheim. They're around the park.
Right, yeah, they're all around Central Park.
Right.
And
but Wolverine's got a better idea.
Yeah. He's like, let's get some chili dogs. That's the food of a warrior.
He doesn't say that.
Yeah, but he like talks like it's like the next great adventure they should have.
I think he's bored too. He's like, listen, chili dogs are better than museums, so let's go.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And it's at this moment we see Carl Lykos. He's in the subway at first, and he comes across a poor hapless soul. And he absorbs this dude's energy just to survive. And he's like, I'm no better than a vampire.
Yeah, and crazy anti-vampire stance this show's
yeah,
taking
I
out
know.
Of nowhere.
Yeah, you're right, yeah. I mean, come on. But, you know, at first I thought this, like, character must be dead. But then very quick... This guy just gets up after 2 seconds.
Immediately.
And I'm like,
you're actually a lot better than a vampire.
Yeah.
Victims walk away easily.
Yeah.
Like 2 minutes.
He fell
no
over,
trauma.
Fell over after like, 1 minute. In cool. 1 minute, yeah. So his power is, like, it's annoying. and it's inconvenient. But, you know, maybe if he got a support group of friends he knows... That he could just absorb their energy casually. He's like, listen, just once a day, I have to knock you out.
People are, like, about to fall asleep, you know?
Right.
Like, could be mutually beneficial, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you have insomnia, I have this thing I need to do.
Right.
Let's help each other out.
Yeah. It doesn't seem that bad.
But anyway.
But he feels especially cursed. I mean, it's bad.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a freakish
way to live.
It sucks. Yeah, it does. You're right. That's the exact description. It totally sucks. It's not, like, super tragic. Well, it is from the Sauron side.
Right.
But right, but it just sucks.
Yeah.
Right. And it sucks for the guy who gets knocked out for a minute, too. That sucks, too. I'd never stop talking about that for the next 3 weeks. If that happened to me, I mean, that'd be legitimately, like, upsetting to me, too, if somebody knocked me out in such a way in the subway.
Yeah.
But anyway. So he gets off the train, and then he, by coincidence, he runs into Wolverine and the other X-Men, and he senses their power. And it's also to be noted that this emblem thing he has, his amulet he has on his chest, is sort of luring him to this mission anyway.
Yeah.
So, at first I thought, like, oh, this is a dumb coincidence. Of all the 10 billion people in New York, he happens to run into Wolverine, Beast, and Jubilee. But, like, really, he's probably being guided there by the magical force of Garrok, the sun god. So he runs into Wolverine and he's like, I need your help. Wolverine's about to give him some money.
Yeah.
He's like, you look like you can use some help. But then he zaps Wolverine's brain with his hands. But Wolverine's a mutant, and so Carl Lykos turns into Sauron. And Sauron, like we said, is a totally different personality than Karl Lykos. He's really evil and bad and power-hungry and insane. So the X-Men immediately have to fight with this guy. So even though there's three X-Men, Sauron's incredibly powerful, so they're a little outnumbered. So they have to call for help. Guys, how do they call for help?
Oh, right. I always forget that they have communicators on them at all times, you know, like walkie-talkies.
So Rogue has a communicator on her bracelet. Makes sense.
Naturally, yes, of course. Yeah.
But she's contacted by Beast. And how does he, what does he do?
That's part of his amazing belt, his Speedo belt.
he goes to, like, reach for his Johnson instead, points at his belt buckle, and that's how he contacts Rogue.
Yeah, he just kind of bends over and talks into his crotch.
Listen, it works. Oh my
God. Yeah.
I mean, but why can he have a bracelet communicator, too? Why did he say, oh, don't worry, my belt buckle's got this?
Well,
I don't know whose decision that was, if it was either Beast's or Professor X.
He's got hairy, muscular arms. No watch band can tame them.
And then we see Storm. She springs to action, and she does her classic move, which we've seen many times in the show. She disintegrates her clothing.
Right. Yes.
Right.
And, you know, which at first I had a problem with this, but then as I've slowly realized with this show, the X-Men really wear fancy clothing. And I think, like I said, they just use Professor X's gold card to just go shopping.
Possible.
Whether at the Westchester Mall or in New York somewhere.
Yeah.
Where are you going to say?
This is not like solely an X-Men thing, though. This is like a constant superhero trope. Well, anyway, we'll revisit this later, but...
Yeah, well, no, what were you going to say about their...
I was going to say, like, we just saw Thor, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. This happens in Thor, too.
Thor Ragnarok.
Yeah.
Not Thor 1.
Yeah, right.
Or Thor 2, the
And
Dark
I
Bro.
Had to, like, laugh a little bit, because there is a scene... I won't go into detail about it, but, like, there is a scene...
I think you can with this. I don't even remember what you're talking about. It's not a spoiler, right?
Right, yeah, no. But there is a scene where, like, you know, the two characters on screen, like... tap a staff against the ground or something like that, and like instantly their clothes change from
Layman's
clothes into like their like superhero costumes.
Oh, is that why you were poking at me in the movie theater?
Yes.
I was
definitely laughing and pointing at the screen.
I did not catch it all while you were doing that. Now it's all making sense. Yeah, you're right.
Anyway.
I mean, you need to be able to change into your costume. I mean,
Superman's
Superman always has the easiest. It's the most logical with him.
Phone booth.
He goes into a phone booth. He spins around, and you can just imagine him changing his clothes in a tenth of a second.
Right.
Batman. It's a little more.
I mean, is that the most logical though? Like,
why?
Phone booths don't really exist anymore, but like they're clear glass. Like there's really no reason for him to stand in there. Like it's kind of the same visibility as if you were just standing on the sidewalk, you know?
It's funny you mention that because that's the joke they make in the Superman movie from 1977.
Yeah,
or 76.
True. All you have
to do is look at a phone booth
and be like, "That doesn't. It's not going to work."
Well, I mean, honestly, in that movie, like there were less phone booths in New York then in the 70s too. So he goes to a phone booth and it's just an open stall.
Yeah,
and he realizes he can't change into his outfit there, but then he finds a building with a revolving door.
Right.
And that's how he does it. He spins really fast in the revolving door.
Right.
So, but you're saying because a phone booth is clear, it doesn't make sense either?
Yeah.
I feel maybe like phone booths in the 1930s had a little more privacy for some reason. I'll have to like Google image search some like ancient phone booths from
people
the
were
40s.
More polite back then.
Right.
Oh, that person's on the phone. I better look away.
Maybe I feel like Superman's move was like he'd hang up maybe his jacket or something. Because I feel like phone booths had like a thing where you could hang up your clothes. I don't know why I'm imagining that. Like a clothesline. And that's how he did it. But anyway, but then I just want to keep talking about superheroes changing their clothes. So, Batman, like in the movies, they make such a big deal about... All right, there's several things you have to talk about Batman. In the Adam West 60s show...
Yes.
Oh, actually, you're right. Sorry. But look at this, guys. This was a 1930s phone booth. Opaque wood from the waist down.
Oh, how about that?
Oh, Google, you're the
best. See, I had a feeling that there was more privacy. It was a more genteel time.
I'm sorry. You're saying about Batman?
Yeah, can I please talk about Batman on my X-Men cartoon?
He's got a cave full of clothes.
Well, it's like so in the Adam West show, he slides down a pole. I want to talk about men in spandex sliding down poles. You guys.
You finally found your platform. You pull your audience and stop laughing at you.
Right. So he slides down a pole and he pulls a lever and he instantly turns into Batman. And that looks painful. Yeah. I don't know what's going on. I don't know how his clothes are appearing on him. And then we see in, like, the Tim Burton movies, he's got, like, this incredibly draconian safe that he keeps the costume in with a huge, like, bank-spinning vault thing on it.
Right.
And he opens it up and he stares dramatically at his costume that's, like, propped, like, up somehow with its vaulted rubber. Mm-hmm. But they never show him actually really assemble it. It looks really hard to get into that thing. They actually, in the later, crappier Joel Schumacher versions, I think they show him put the outfit on in, like, a weird, like, editing cutaways.
Yeah, it's like a really quick montage.
Right, like, snapping the costume in place. It still doesn't make sense, like, how he's fitting into it. And then, what do they do in the Christian Bale movies? Do we remember or not really?
I don't know, we never see him put it on.
Yeah, right. Because it's too insane. I mean, the costume is so impractical.
Right.
So, anyway, so... Storm's probably got the best out of all of them. She can just disintegrate her clothing.
Yeah.
Let's get back on topic.
Here we go.
So she's flying away. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention there is a cameo from Larry Houston. He's one of the executive producers, and I think like one of the main directors of the show. He does a lot. He's responsible for a lot of the animation. So we see him in the window, like, drawing some, you know, cartoons or whatever, presumably. So shout out to Larry. We love you, Larry. I don't know if you're listening to this podcast. I was telling you guys that I, like... Okay, so the previously on X-Men book has been released, so everyone should they should do their civic duty and buy it by Eric Lewald, and we've interviewed them on previous podcasts. So, so he's one major part of the X-Men animated series production team. Another major guy is Larry Houston, as I just mentioned, and he, I went to the Facebook page for the previously on X-Men book, which I liked and now I follow, and Larry's like on there talking to them about stuff.
Nice.
And then I just like clicked on his name and I was like on Larry's like private Facebook page. I guess his privacy settings are not like up.
Right.
And so I was like, wow, like I could just reach out to Larry if I wanted to.
That's cool.
But I was a little intimidated. I was like, maybe.
Well, I mean, what are you going to say to Larry?
I don't know. Yeah. Oh, he's awesome. Okay. I'm sure he'd be a great interview. Like, so yeah. Maybe one day we'll reach out to Larry.
Okay.
But check out my Batman podcast. But the thing is,
I felt bad. I just felt bad how like easily I found his Facebook page. I felt like I'd be crossing a line if I sent him an instant
maybe
message.
Maybe it's on purpose. Mm.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe he's just waiting for us to... Probably
maybe
not.
He's like, hey, fans, right. Talk to me.
So anyway, the X-Men start fighting with Sauron. Rogue tackles him or something in the sky, and Sauron brainwashes her.
Right.
And and so he brainwashes her to think that the other X-Men are like monsters. So Storm turns into this like Halloween witch woman.
Right.
And the other X-Men turn to furry beasts or something on the ground.
Mm. So Jubilee turns into a praying mantis.
Yeah. So she's gone insane. And I like the effect they do on Rogue and Storm later when they get brainwashed by Sauron. Their eyes are like flickering electric green, which is really...
There are a lot of strobe effects in this episode.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, this is in the era in the 90s when cartoon shows might have given your children seizures.
Yeah.
there's less quality control on that. But it turns out Sauron is not after Rogue or Wolverine. He's after Storm. Garrok needs Storm for some reason.
Mm.
So Sauron's job here is to kidnap Storm, and he does so. Does he brainwash her in this moment, too?
I believe so.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, he totally does.
Right, puts her to sleep.
Yeah,
right,
every chance he gets, right?
Yeah. It's a thing.
And turns out Sauron has like a lot of weird powers. He's got, like, these weird psychic powers where he can brainwash people, put illusions in their head. Uh-huh. Then we see him as he's escaping. He, like, zaps something at the ground, and the ground rises
that
up.
That came out of the Garrok amulet.
Oh, was that?
Yeah.
Okay. Right,
yeah.
That detail. So Storm with... Storm's been kidnapped, and Wolverine immediately surmises that, I guess they're going to the Savage Land. and in the midst of all this, Beast has to... like calm Rogue down. He jumps off a tree and jumps on her in the sky and crashes her into the lake in Central Park.
Yeah.
So Storm gets back to her senses. So quickly, Beast, Wolverine, and Rogue, and Jubilee, they all hop on the X on the Blackbird, and they're again off on another 12-hour journey to the Antarctica. No, it's got to be more than 12 hours to fly to the South Pole.
Not in the Blackbird, man.
Yeah, come on. All
right, yeah, because it's a supersonic jet. Okay. Yeah, so they're flying off to Antarctica, and we're back in the Savage Land, and Sauron delivers Storm to Garrok and Zaladin, and they sort of lock her up, and it's still not clear yet what they need of Storm, but they establish that Storm is a different person when her wild side has been released.
Right. And they need that untapped energy or something.
I mean, again, like, a little strange that we haven't heard this too much before. Yeah. You know? Like, this is the first indication we're getting that she's, like, a really powerful X-Man? X-Woman?
It's interesting to think about Storm as a really powerful mutant that needs to control her powers, because her powers do seem kind of unlimited based on the basic premise of them.
Sure. Yeah.
Like what could she not do? She could, you know, start a tornado, which she has done, but she could also start a hurricane, presumably. Maybe she could make a Category 5.
Yeah, right.
Like, what are, like, weather things that she could do? Like, what are the weather...
Does she control volcanoes?
I was just about to say volcanoes for some reason, but that's not the weather. No, she can't do volcanoes.
Yeah, that's Earth.
Right. It's only atmospheric, right?
So she can do lightning, rain, wind...
Snow.
That's a... Yeah, but that makes sense.
Yeah.
Clouds, like mist, fog...
Yeah.
That type of stuff.
Douse you with some torrential sleet. That'd be...
Hail. That'd be right.
Hail, yeah.
That'd be pretty bad.
You know, and lightning. I remember reading some X-Men comic. I don't remember which one, but Storm... she can control the temperature around her skin so that she can be comfortable in any environment.
That's cool.
That's a cool power. So she can go to the Arctic and be fine, or go to a hot climate and not be uncomfortable.
Oh, maybe she's the person you're looking for to explore the sun.
I don't think she... Well, but she's earthbound, though, so I think that...
Okay.
I don't think... We discussed this in the Phoenix episodes, why she wasn't brought on the space missions.
Right.
And the question was, can Storm control the weather in space? Or can she control... Well, in outer space,
that's
no.
That's the thing. Right. There is no weather in space.
But in an artificial environment of a spaceship where there's oxygen, can she summon a cloud or something?
Right. Or on another planet or...
Right. Yeah, on another planet. Is she only... Are her powers only limited to planet Earth?
I got to imagine no. It would just have to be the atmosphere, as long as there's an atmosphere.
That's
right?
Interesting. Like, well, maybe our Facebook fans can let us know what the limits of Storm's powers are. But on Earth, she seemed pretty damn powerful.
Yeah.
Like, who knows what the hell she could do. She can change the climate, so that's another insane thing that she could do as well.
Yeah. Yeah, all she has to do is make it Arizona temperature, and you're done, man.
Yeah.
You know, we actually, speaking of the Phoenix Saga, we saw her save the Verrazano Bridge, and by extension Brooklyn and Staten Island, from an enormous tidal wave, and she's using wind to push back a tidal wave. So that is an insane power.
Yeah.
To summon that much wind to reverse a tidal wave. So, yeah, so Storm, her power limit's, like, pretty much close to 10. So no surprise why this Garrok person wants her. So the X-Men, they land in the Savage Land, and another great Wolverine quote comes upon us. So Rogue says something like, I'm going to give the local area a look-see. Does anyone want to say what Wolverine says?
Please, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I'm going to have me a smell-see.
And, Wolverine's having himself a smell-see.
And then immediately a T-Rex comes out of nowhere.
You know, I'm really... Well, yeah, okay. But, I you know... When smell-o-vision finally gets invented,
people will stop listening to podcasts.
Right, they'll stop listening to podcasts. Well, why? Because they'll smell us and they'll.
Yeah, exactly.
This podcast smells terrible. but that's. So I wonder, like, because the word smell-see sounds so much like selfie. I'm wondering, it's like. In the world of smell-o-vision, like, how will you take a smell-see? Will that be a button you could press? Like, you're looking at your celebrity. It's like, oh, press the smell-see button, and then you could smell them. It's
like, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, no, like, not a celebrity, but, like, food.
You look at I'm taking a smell-see at the pizza place.
So in one sense, that would be useful. All right, so Wolverine...
I don't know if useful is quite right.
Guys, it's really hard being a podcast host. The things that come out of your mouth are just insane. So, Dash, as you said, there's a dinosaur attack, and it's a T-Rex.
Mm-hmm.
And then it made me wonder why they bring in Jubilee. You know, there's an enormous dinosaur.
I don't think they had a choice on this adventure.
Why? Just leave her at home.
Well,
all by herself in the X-Mansion?
Nah. Boring. Yeah, she'll ruin everything.
Well, we have established it's like an enormous mansion, and literally only five people live there. It's like the five X-Men in Jubilee. There's like no one else. So, right, maybe you just can't leave her there.
Anyway, here she is.
Right, fighting a dinosaur. Yeah. It seems awfully dangerous. Yeah. They managed to, fight off the dinosaur. And then our old pal Kazar reemerges. And
he saves them from the dinosaur. Yeah.
So he jumps on the dinosaur, and he leads it to this pit of leaves. And the dinosaur falls down there. And Kazar's like, that should hold him for a while. Yeah. And I was thinking, like, this dinosaur is submerged, like, under his head. How is he going to get out of this, like, narrow hole that he's fallen into? That dinosaur is going to die.
Maybe they'll eat him, then.
Who will eat him?
Kazar.
Oh, they eat dinosaurs in the Savage Land?
I don't know. What else are they going to eat?
Yeah.
You know, I've seen people in various, like, dumb media eat dinosaur eggs. Like, Mr. Burns, like, requires to eat, like, pterodactyl omelets. And he's got a supply of them. But I've never actually seen anyone in pop culture eat dinosaur meat. That would be... I wonder what a dinosaur... I mean,
humans eat crocodiles.
Oh, right, yeah. Right? So it's a reptile.
Kind of like that, I guess.
Sure.
Although,
I've had some rattlesnake.
There you go.
You know, but they... You know, everything I ever read about dinosaurs in the last 10 years, they always make a point of saying, it's like, dinosaurs are more bird-like than we imagined.
Yeah.
And basically to the point where it says, dinosaurs are giant birds.
Right.
They're not reptiles at all.
Right, yeah. So maybe they are like chickens.
Delicious, enormous chickens.
Mm. Leather chickens.
Yeah. Good callback. And then there's a touching moment where Zabu and Wolverine tackle each other.
And
they're old pals.
He's this big kitty.
Yeah. And they're, like, rubbing each other and hanging out. And it made me think, like, you know, it wouldn't be so bad if Wolverine had a pet. And you suggested a good one.
That he had a pet wolf.
Right, that'd be cool, right?
Yeah, that'd be fitting, I think.
But the only reason I'm bringing that up is because it's lucky he didn't have a pet wolf or a pet dog. In the previously on X-Men book, which you can buy now, they talk about how the studio wanted them to give Wolverine, like, a pet dog, like, stupidly.
Yeah.
And they had a fight against that. And there's
just
other...
give him a Scrappy-Doo.
Right. Yeah, I read that in some article. I haven't gotten the book yet. It's on pre-order. Right, yeah, give him a Scrappy-Doo. That'd been ridiculous. They also wanted Wolverine, I read in this, like, this insert, they wanted to give him, like, Wolverine pajamas. And by that I mean that he'd be wearing pajamas that have his face on them all over.
Like, because that's what was for sale at the time.
Well, like, they wanted to sell them. They wanted to sell a line of Wolverine pajamas, and they had to fight so hard against that. They also wanted Wolverine playing with his own toys. They're like, can you write a scene where Wolverine's got some Wolverine toys and he's playing with them? And they're like, no. And they were talking about that they always would have to threaten to quit, and they'd sue back down. Yeah. And there's an even more insane story that I won't reveal here. I'll save it for the book.
It's
like the ultimate, like, ridiculous thing. The show almost ended because of it.
Oh, wow.
But like,
I gotta read that book.
Yeah, let's all buy the book. And if you order the book directly off the publisher, which I cannot recall the name of right now, but you could just search it out on Google, that you get a free signed you get a signed copy by Eric Lewald. So
cool.
He's gonna sign all the ones bought off the publisher's website, not off Amazon. So
awesome.
That's some incentive there. Wow, I'm really hawking this book, but much deserved. So in the fight with the T-Rex, Jubilee's clothes got ruined, so she goes into a jungle hut and changes into her, like,
Flintstones
clothes.
Gear.
Yeah. And you know what I liked about that scene? She says she's fully expecting the X-Men to make fun of her, but they don't.
They've got bigger fish to fry.
Yeah.
They don't have time to make fun of her.
Yeah, but I like that, though. I don't know why. I just thought, like, you know, people could make jokes, but...
Well, but also, like, she's a teenager and they're adults,
right.
So...
Yeah,
like,
they're not on the same level.
They're not gonna make fun of her
no matter
what.
They don't care, yeah. They're just, like, protective parents. And then, so they're all hanging out at Kazar's village. Kazar's sort of explaining what's going on with Soren, how he had a reign of terror.
Right.
And they've recently stopped it. And, but it's at this moment that Sauron's forces attack the Kazar's village again.
Right.
So they get into another fight, and Wolverine cues up Beast for an infamous fastball special.
That's right.
So, you know, I'm only mentioning this. This is a famous thing from the comics that mainly between Wolverine and Colossus, although he's done it with other characters, and other characters have sort of appropriated it too, where Wolverine would jump in Colossus's arms and he would launch him in the sky like a missile claws out. Yeah, it's really funny. And in the Colossus episode from season one, they hint at the fastball special, but he doesn't outright say it because they were too cool for school then. Like, Colossus throws Wolverine and Wolverine says, "Great arm on that guy." Something like that. So here, Wolverine says, "I need a fastball special," so that's kind of funny. A nice shout out there to the comics. And then back at the Citadel, Zaladin lets loose Storm, who's like chained up to a wall and her eyes are flashing green, and they say, "Be free now." What's his name again? Garrok's will be done. And so they just let her loose. We don't know yet why they want Storm to go insane over the Savage Land,
right?
But it has something to do with Garrok.
Yeah. And meanwhile, there's this giant stone statue.
Right. Yeah, I haven't talked about Garrok.
Seemingly come out of nowhere. Yeah. It's like, "What's up, dudes?" It's just a giant, like, Easter Olmec. Island head. Yeah, it's Olmec.
It's Olmec from Legends of the Hidden Temple. "I've got three questions for the Silver Monkeys." Yeah. "In what year did George Washington fight the British?" I really enjoyed that. You know what's funny about that show? I remember watching that show as it was on as a child and thinking it was so lame then, but not being able to turn my eyes away from it. I was there for every episode.
Oh, man, not me, dude.
Well, no, I loved it.
I was terrified of those temple guards.
Those are legitimate jump scares. Yeah. When they go into the final maze and they have to... And I thought that contest was so unfair, too, because it really seemed like you had a 50-50 chance of winning no matter how well you played.
Mm-hmm.
That sometimes if you went in the temple, there's just more guards than you can handle.
Right.
And then it just wasn't fair. Well, I don't even know what I'm talking about this.
So the physical representation of Garrok...
Is Olmec.
Olmec, yeah, just hanging out, and he's like, "Yeah, cool, my plan's coming together."
A lot of talking stoneheads in the 1990s in children's entertainment for some reason. Another mystery. We're tying all these threads together. So this podcast is going to lead to
something.
We're going
to unlock the 90s.
Yeah, this is some grand epiphany. We're working towards something. I don't know what. But meanwhile, they were battling Sauron too, but he again turns back into Karl Lykos. And
after Jubilee dumps a bunch of rocks on him.
Yeah,
because rocks don't mean anything. And that's true. Yeah.
Yeah, for once.
Yeah.
All right.
And Wolverine's ready to stab this guy in the face. but Kazar stops him. It's the funniest moment. I think, Dash, you have to describe this moment or act it out or something.
Wolverine just lunges at him, like you said, ready to literally stab him in the face.
Yeah.
And,
Do you remember the moment?
Maybe I'm not sure.
Kazar is behind Wolverine and it shoots Kazar's face.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he just has this wide eyed look. He's like, "Carl."
And it's just so hilarious. The idea that, you know,
this guy is named Carl.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's friends with Kazar.
They're buds.
Carl and Kazar.
It's really a small world.
Yeah. And then, Carl explains, "I'm really a good guy. Sauron's a bad guy. And he even goes as far as saying, "I should be punished for Sauron's crimes, even though I'm not in control and it's hard for me to remember what's going on when that happens." But that's sort of where the episode ties up to an end. And we get, out of nowhere, the most dramatic to be continued yet.
Yeah.
On the
wowza
show.
Dowza. It was something.
Pulled out all the special effects, flying in each word separately.
Yeah, with blue sparkles.
Star stream behind it.
I was like, wow, I don't remember these episodes being that dramatic.
Yeah, really.
But it is another two-parter, and we're left on another classic X-Men cliffhanger.
Oh, man.
Which is, again, to repeat, it's one of the greatest aspects of the show that they didn't... It was serialized storytelling, which people just assumed kids would not be able to follow or remember. But that was, the greatest aspect that made me have to be there next week to watch the next episode. I had to see what happened next.
Absolutely.
And I'd be thinking about it all week, biting my nails. So they really came across a great gimmick there. And that is that is the foundation of the Marvel Universe in general. They started in the comics, everything is a cliffhanger, everything's tied together, And that's what they're continuing on with the movies to this day. And, you know, Sonia, we mentioned Thor Ragnarok, that mm-hmm. we saw it. We literally saw it this morning at 10 a.m., right before Dash came over.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
before he emerged from the from the Savage Land. I just want to talk about it real quick. Now, Dash, you haven't seen it.
No, so please try not to give anything away.
We're not going to give any
spoilers. I'm very excited to see it.
Other than the fact that they quick change their outfits.
Okay. Right, yeah. That does. You have to. Sorry, Dash.
It's over.
So, and it's good. And you know the director. So who's the director?
Oh, boy. It's
Takiti?
Taika Waititi, I want to say. I'm probably saying it wrong.
Awesome name, yeah.
He rules. I'm really excited. Because I didn't love those first two Thor movies. They're all right, but I was really excited for this one.
So what other movies has he done?
He did this vampire mockumentary called What We Do in Shadows that's hysterical. Like,
wow.
Find it right away.
All right, yeah.
And then he did this other movie, Hunt for the Wildepeople? If you look up this guy...
Something Wildebeest, maybe? Or no?
Hunt for the Wildebeest, something like
that. Okay,
But also fantastic. Like, not as laugh-out-loud funny as What We Do in Shadows, but... I guess you could even say a little more mature. Like it's still fantastic. Both like highly recommend movies. The Wildepeople one. It's got Sam Neill.
One
of the leads. Mm. Yeah, it's Sam Neill and this adorable, hilarious kid that he's taken on as a foster parent.
Nice.
And it's really great. He's just this. Australian loner.
I think he's in New Zealand. Oh, you're talking about...
Or New Zealand, maybe. Right, yeah, Zealand, I forget now. Yeah. I think, it must be New Zealand.
This movie, Thor Ragnarok, so I haven't seen the other ones now. I'm very excited. I thought it was, like, almost a masterpiece. That's how good I thought. I was blown away in my chair. And I was fully expecting, like... You know, I really enjoy most of the Marvel movies.
Mm.
But it's like, you know, we go see Ant-Man, we go see Doctor Strange, and they're fun, and they're nice and entertaining. But at the same time, you're just like... You know, the beats are all the same in a lot of ways.
Yeah, they really are.
The colors are a little bland sometimes, even though they've actually been getting a little more rich in color. And you're just like... It's not... I wouldn't say they're bland, but there's like something like real soft-serve ice cream about them.
We've also... It's been happening for years now. Like,
yeah,
we
it's
know
been so many.
What,
this is like the 17th one.
Yeah,
this one.
Well, that's the thing, though, is that we keep saying, this is the 17th one, I don't need to see these in the theater anymore. Yeah. And yet, we still... go and see them in the theater.
Yeah, well, like, we're nerds.
Almost every time. Maybe every single time.
And notice how this is a show about the X-Men, the animated series, not the X-Men comic book. So it's like we're kind of like laid back, like nerds. So it's like,
poser.
So I mean, the Marvel movies are aimed right at us. You know?
Right, true. All that said, I think.
Which makes sense.
I actually really enjoyed the first two Thor movies for super...
We inexplicably like them more than most
people.
No,
I'm going to explain it right now.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Please do.
Oh, I think it's inexplicable. You have
no,
reasons.
No, it's explicable, but it's like an extremely superficial reason.
Okay.
It's that it was the first time that we saw in CGI like these amazing space scenes. Where
that was in Thor 2.
Yeah, where he's going through like all these like nebula clusters and things like that, and like purely from a visual standpoint of like a person who's a real nerd about astronomy and loving science
it looked really
things,
good.
I was like, but he's in the nebula, like, fantasy fulfillment done.
Yeah.
So from that standpoint,
and we've always enjoyed Chris Hemsworth.
Yes,
I always have trouble with actors' names.
Oh yeah, he's great.
Yeah,
he's fantastic.
Yeah. And Tom Hiddleston as Loki was always enjoyable.
Yeah.
But anyway, this movie I think cranks it up to another level. This is like, so forget about the soft serve vanilla like pleasant Marvel movies. This was like I said, for me a borderline masterpiece.
I feel like that's kind of like a.
I was about to go off on a tangent.
I know. I saw it coming in. Masterpiece doesn't capture what I like about this film.
Fine.
Masterpiece to me is like a big moving type of cinematic experience.
That's true.
And that's not what I felt about this movie. It was super fun and enjoyable to watch and hit like more smart and comedic beats than the previous Marvel movies that I've seen.
Yeah, it's the funniest Marvel movie yet. It's pretty laugh-out-loud funny.
But it's, like, it's got a different tone than, like, a Guardians of the Galaxy.
Right. It's funnier than Guardians of the Galaxy, by far, to me, you know. But again, I'm not the biggest Guardians of the Galaxy fan, so maybe that's... So people love that movie. They adore it. I don't know how you feel about that.
I like those movies a lot, too.
A lot of space stuff in that.
Yeah. Stuff. Good soundtracks. I mean, you know, good characters, like...
But
I don't know.
Anyway,
I like them. This movie to me was like the best example. It was like a good culmination of all that other stuff that's come before. It's like Marvel's learning as it goes.
You see the Marvel learning machine. They're like, this is what audience is
becoming more self-aware.
This is what audience is like, and then let's turn each factor up to 10. You know, they really blow it out the water.
I just feel like saying masterpiece sets people up with these like real high expectations and maybe sets them up for failure.
The only reason I said the word...
The Academy Award goes to Thor, Ragnarok.
The third entry in a 17-part cross-conglomerate series. But the only reason I said that is there's just like one scene, and it's not spoilers, there's no details, but just like the way it's staged, there's a framing where it looked exactly like a comic book. And the and the timing and the colors and the brilliance of the shot and the music playing and just the emotional moments leading up to it. It was just such an epic piece of filmmaking. And I'll use this word just like staging. Not filmmaking. That's right. That may be going too far. It's not Martin Scorsese or, you know, you know, whoever. It's by filmmaking, I meant the staging of all the scenes. Everything is staged so wonderfully. And it's just beautiful to look at too. It looks great. The special effects are like out of this world, and the action is amazing too. Like the other thing is, I've gotten so tired of these action movies in general and Marvel action movies. You know, it's just boring beating up robots and random explosions and just like nonsense. Here, I was like pretty riveted watching it. I was like,
it's
oh,
funny because like one of the coming attractions before the movie started was what is it? Finn from
Pacific
Star
Rim
Wars
2.
Is in it. Yeah, like as soon as that like coming attraction started, I was like, ugh, another Transformers.
People
movie.
Love that movie. People love Pacific Rim. I haven't really seen it,
they do.
But like you're right, I don't care. Like giant robots blowing each other up, this looks dumb.
I mean, I don't know. No offense to the people out there that like it. I'm sure there's reasons that you like it.
I mean, it's probably a good movie.
I don't get it, really.
Was that Guillermo del Toro did Pacific
Rim?
That movie's got something to it. It's pretty interesting. I mean, I haven't seen it, but whatever. So you're right. The sequel to that looked dumb. It looked like ridiculous, like Godzilla dumbness.
Yeah.
But this movie, it had a lot of Godzilla dumbness, but it was like great.
But still good. So
Anyway. Yeah, so that's all we have to say about Thor Ragnarok. I fully recommend seeing it. One of my favorite Marvel movies ever now. I think it's like, from just a technical perspective, it's the best one.
Cool.
It looks like they put the most money into it. So, and that's kind of funny about Marvel now. It just looks like with each movie, it doesn't have to be the Avengers. It doesn't have to be the tentpole. Now they're just saying, let's put all the money in each one and see what happens. Because like, why else would they do that for Thor 3?
Yeah.
And so it looks it on the screen. It just looks incredible, and it was a lot of fun. Of fun. Yeah.
And is Black Panther next? Is that the next one?
Good question. I think it is.
I'm stoked
for that. Because we saw the trailer in the movie theater, and there was a new trailer for that. That looked great.
Yeah,
it looked awesome. I can't wait to see it. I love Black Panther in the comics, first of all, too. He's a really great
underrated
character.
It's going to be really cool to have that be part of the mix.
I really hope they hit it out of the park. And the director they got for that, I can't remember his name, but he's the guy...
He did Creed?
Yeah, he did Creed. Right? Okay, yeah. He's a young African-American director, so that should be interesting perspective and voice and all that stuff. So yeah, Black Panther is probably next, and then probably Avengers 4, right?
I guess so, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well... Whatever.
It's happening. We can't stop it.
All right, so that's all I have for this episode. Before we go, let's do our usual stuff. Dash, enlighten us with how people can best consume you as an entity out there.
You can find me and my band on Instagram. That's where we're at. My handle is j.o.crystal. Or my band is Secretary Legs, all one word. Wherever you just Google Secretary Legs and band, very important.
Did you mention to us that you have a new album?
A new album coming out soon. Can't say anything for sure, but we have other releases that are pretty good.
That
you can check out.
That's extremely exciting.
And modest, too.
Yeah. I thoroughly recommend everyone to go check out Dash, his Instagram, and Secretary Legs. I would like to say find me on Twitter at Willie Simpson. Rate and review the podcast 5 stars on whatever podcast form you use. I guess preferably iTunes. It seems to matter the most. That really goes a long way to increasing our exposure. And again, our numbers keep – more people are listening to the podcast every week, so that's extremely lovely and flattering.
Yep.
And we thank all our fans for all that.
Yeah, spread the word. It's really easy to do that.
Yes, it is. And find and it's the 25th anniversary of the X-Men the Animated Series, so we should have mentioned that as X-Men with an X-Men Animated Series podcast. That just happened a few days ago, and that was the day that the previously on X-Men book was released. So I thoroughly encourage everyone to check that out and follow them on Twitter at XMenTass. Also, join our Facebook group and talk with us. X-Men Task Podcast Facebook group. Just search it out. You should find it, no problem. Join the group. We'll add you, and you can communicate with us. That is all I have for this week, ladies and gentlemen. Any final words, Sonia?
Nope.
Dash.
Nope.
All right. Goodbye, everybody.